about my feelings for you, but I've never slept with a client before.
I'm not a client, and we haven't slept together yet, she pointed out.
I'm trying to explain this is new territory for me. I want to help you train. It's my area of expertise, but I'm also attracted to you. I'm also a little surprised you haven't analyzed the hell out of all this. She gave a dainty shrug. It's harder to find perspective when it's my stupid feelings of inadequacy. Why would you feel inadequate? I asked, stretching an arm across the back of the booth.
I'm flawed,
she said with a small frown.
Duh.
Now I laughed.
Shelby, of course you're flawed. We're all flawed. Let me be clear. I have a bigger issue with you asking 40 million questions to dissect something than I do with you having ankylosing spondylitis. You looked it up?
Surprised, she picked up her coffee and sipped.
I did. You got a problem with that?
I teased.
I don't know. I haven't decided,
she said primly. Well, you think on it. Clarabelle returned, a steaming plate in each hand.
Enjoy, y'all.
Shelby stared down at her plate like it was fresh roadkill.
Back to your diet and nutrition,
I said, sliding the napkin-wrapped silverware in her direction. We're going to find healthy foods that you'll like to eat. You don't have to eat anything you hate.
Good, because I think I'm going to hate this.
She poked at the omelet with her fork. I pulled the containers out of the carrier on the table. Let's cut it into thirds, one with just salt and pepper, one with ketchup, and one with hot sauce, I suggested.
Okay, she said miserably.
She was unbelievably cute. Her freckles were rioting after yesterday's sun. She'd scooped her hair back in one of those knots women seemed to favor. Her bangs framed her glasses and those mournful hazel eyes. I had the urge to order her a short stack of pancakes with a gallon of syrup just to see her smile.
What's this?
She asked, spearing a piece of melon. It's what they make sangria out of.
Let's get this over with,
she muttered. She liked grapes, pineapple, and honeydew, and she spit out the cantaloupe in her napkin. As for the omelet, Shelby surprised herself and didn't hate it spiced up with hot sauce.
This isn't awful,
she mused, taking another forkful. I'm sure the cook will take that as a compliment, I said wryly.
Coming from me, it's high praise for anything other than chicken nuggets and applesauce.
I winced. You eat like a picky toddler.
Believe me, I know it. It's embarrassing when Mom whips up some fabulous chicken parm from scratch for the family, and there I am with my nuggets and ranch dressing,
she said, cutting another bite of eggs. She put down her fork and pulled her phone out to snap a picture of her plate.
Speaking of Mom, I'm going to send her proof that my palate is expanding.
Her thumbs flew across the screen, and I tried to focus on my breakfast. Now that I'd kissed her, well, it was hard to not think about doing it again. And again. She'd responded to me like I was waking her up from a long sleep, like I was something special. And I really liked that. But was I ready?
Okay,
she said, dropping her phone back on the table.
Let's cover the following topics. 1, do you still want to pursue a physical relationship with me? And 2, how do you feel about your mom surprising you? And why aren't you out to breakfast with her?
Mom thing first, I decided. I'm thrilled she's here. I hadn't realized how much I missed her until I saw her last night. As for why I'm having breakfast with you, Mom's nursing a hangover. I'm giving her a grand tour of the town this afternoon when her eyes are less bloodshot and she's done sweating fireball. Shelby nodded approvingly and ate another grape.
Go on.
The physical relationship thing. I'm obviously attracted to you. You know that, don't you? She cocked her head, frowning.
I sense a but approaching.
But I don't know if I'm ready to pursue anything. I've never been a fling kind of guy, I confessed. I liked long-term relationships, liked building a history with a woman. However, I don't know what the future holds. I wasn't kidding about missing my mom. We're close, and I don't know if I really want to set up a life on the opposite side of the country from her. She pursed her lips.
I don't have room in my schedule for an actual relationship. This dissertation is basically haunting every waking moment, and then there's the triathlon training and dealing with this diagnosis thing, and I don't know where I'm going to be by the end of summer, hopefully juggling well-paying job offers.
Okay, where does that leave us? I asked.
I think I would be doing a disservice to myself and nerd girls everywhere if I didn't try to enjoy a summer fling with my incredibly attractive roommate. Every woman needs a man she can remember fondly forever. I want you to be that for me.
I nodded slowly. A physical relationship with no strings or expectations, and you'll look back on this summer when you're 85 and wonder whatever happened to that nice trainer you lived with?
Exactly, she said, beaming at me.
I hesitated, and she sensed it. I appreciate you being so open about it, I began.
But...
she pressed. I hated myself for it. I just don't know if I'm ready yet.
Because of Renee?
She asked softly. I set my teeth, annoyed with myself that after an entire year I still hadn't moved on. Yeah, I guess it still weighs on my mind. Shelby nodded and scooped up another bite.
The offer is there. You think about it.
I doubted I'd be thinking of much else.
20. Shelby. Breakfast eaten and physical relationship offer made, Jonah guided me out of the diner with a hand on the small of my back. I approved.
We're going to take a whole new approach to your training,
he was saying. I wondered if he knew he retreated into professional mode as a defense mechanism. I guessed that, with as attractive as his clients were bound to find him, he had developed the defense early on in his career. It didn't bother me that he was using it against me. I'd rattled him, and presented him with an offer that he would most definitely be considering. A researcher was nothing if not patient, and I could be patient for Jonah. He had things to work through. I respected that. It was a bright summer day. Summertimers, as Bootleg called them, flooded into town, filling rentals, buying out the pop-in, and splashing in the warm waters of the lake. Jonah explained how we were going to work more on endurance and rest to ease my body into the distances required for the triathlon. It sounded well thought out, carefully researched. I approved the method. Pardon me, I said when Mona Lisa McNugget pranced in front of us. We stopped and gave the chicken on a mission the right of way. Be careful crossing the street, I warned her. I felt Jonas stiffen next to me and looked up. The couple looked familiar. They were older, well-dressed, but unsmiling. There was something about them, something wounded, something wrong.
Morning, Judge, Jonah said. Mrs. Kendall?
The Kendalls. Missing Callie's long-suffering parents. The dark cloud immediately made sense.
Good morning,
the judge said, searching for Jonah's name and coming up dry. Hi, I'm Shelby, I said, offering my hand. Jonah and the rest of the Bodines have been so welcoming to me in town. The judge looked down at my hand and hesitated briefly. It might have been my imagination, but I thought Mrs. Kendall nudged him before he took my hand. He shook like a limp fish. His palm was soft, smooth, like it had never been sullied with manual labor. Mrs. Kendall, on the other hand, had a grip that was firm and bone dry. Her hair was cut in a ruthlessly stylish pixie shape. Her lips were painted a neutral pink, and she was wearing a sedate set of pearls over her ice-blue sweater. "Welcome to Bootleg Springs," she said, her voice quiet yet not soft. "I'm sure you see why my husband and I keep coming back here. It's a lovely escape." "It's a wonderful town," I agreed. Inside, I was running through the last updates on the missing person case. These poor parents had been put through the fiasco of having an imposter come forward pretending to be their daughter. And now they were waiting, along with the rest of West Virginia, to find out if the body in New York was all that was left of their hopes of finding Callie alive. It was miserably unfair. I felt guilty for my knee-jerk reaction to them. I tried to focus on the tension radiating between Jonah and the Kendalls. Blood of the prime suspect pumped through his veins. The parents wanted answers, and the Bodines were afraid of what those answers might be. "You're the new Bodine, aren't you?" Mrs. Kendall asked suddenly. Jonah hesitated for a moment.
"Yes, I came to Bootleg last year." "Did you and your father spend much time together when he was alive?" Judge Kendall asked, interest burning off the coolness in his gray eyes. Jonah blinked, shook his head. "He wasn't in my life, sir."
Judge Kendall nodded, his expression unreadable.
"A sad situation. A child should grow up with their parents."
Mrs. Kendall slid her hand through her husband's arm. It felt as if it was a signal more than a sign of affection. "Every child deserves good memories of their parents," she said. "And every parent deserves a lifetime with their child. Not all of us get what we deserve." There was an unavoidable bond that linked the three of them together in the summer sunshine. Two people, now long gone, held the answers to the questions.
"I'm sorry for your loss," Jonah said sincerely.
"Thank you,"
Judge Kendall said. There was something flat about the man's eyes. Empty. Or was it cold?
"Well, it was so nice to meet you both," I said, reaching for Jonah's hand. "But we have a trail to run, don't we, Jonah?" I gave his hand a crushing squeeze.
Sure. Have a nice day,"
Jonah said as I dragged him down the sidewalk.
"What was that about?"
he asked. "If that situation got any more uncomfortable, it would permanently damage our psyches," I whispered, sparing a glance over my shoulder. Judge Kendall was standing in the same spot watching us. A shiver worked its way up my spine. I tossed a friendly wave in his direction.
"Their daughter went missing over a decade ago from this town, and they have to share their vacations with the family of the prime suspect,"
he said, steering me in the direction of his car.
"I think some slack has been earned."
"I get it. It doesn't make it any less awkward," I told him. The uncomfortable vibe was logical on several levels. Sometimes people who survived a tragedy were marked by it. There was a distinct before and after in their family history. Some never returned to the before. Culturally, there were the psychological constructs of classism to be considered. A judge and his well-to-do wife versus rural West Virginia. There was an automatic divide between the you-alls and the y'alls. The existence of privileges and protections that didn't apply equally. And of course, then came the resulting isolation from a traumatic event that could leave people in their own impenetrable social bubble. No one else could possibly understand how they felt about their daughter's disappearance, and they were surrounded by people here in Bootleg Springs who felt their own sense of ownership over the case. Walls were necessary for survival sometimes. I knew that better than anyone. I slipped back to the stairwell,
the blood, the sound of footsteps, the razor's edge of fear sharper than any blade. I felt the slow slide of nausea roll through me, but I brought myself back, calmly. I could tiptoe that line. I could remember without suffering. Much.
Are you okay?
Jonah asked, concerned.
You went pale.
I guess I'm a little less steady than I thought. It was the truth, though not necessarily for the reason he suspected. He opened the passenger door for me, and I gratefully sat.
I'm taking you home. We're going to work out a training plan that fits your health, and then you're taking a nap.
No sex? 10 whole minutes, and you're still not sure you want to consummate our physical relationship? Sheesh, what's a girl got to do? I teased.
Don't be a brat. I don't like seeing you go pale like that. You're going to have to get used to having someone care.
Get used to having someone care. I'd used the physical distance from my family to insulate myself. They'd always worried about me. Adopted Shelby, nerdy Shelby. I was more interested in reading books on the weekends than going out with friends and kissing boys. To be fair, the boys weren't great kissers, and the friendships I had didn't thrive on conversations about Myers-Briggs personality types that I found fascinating. I was different, and I fit as best I could by keeping little pieces to myself. Maybe it was the fruit, I mused.
Your body is detoxing from artificial sweeteners, he predicted.
He looked over his shoulder before easing onto bathtub gin alley, and then he took my hand. Maybe he wasn't ready to make a decision yet, but I could tell in which direction he was leaning. Reassured, I let the memories fade and focused on the feel of the sun on my skin through the open car windows. Question: how do you handle a dispute with a neighbor? Nadine Tucker. Step 1, the friendly nudge. I hope you don't mind me saying, but could y'all do me a favor and not? Step 2, the gentle warning. Do you remember how we talked about this, or are you touched in the head? Step 3, if you do that one more time, I will burn your life to the ground. Step 4, I've never had to activate the nuclear option.
21. Jonah. This is Build-A-Shine. I pointed to the cedar-shingled building on our right. You can flavor your own moonshine. Want to give it a try? My mother pressed a hand delicately to her mouth. She was hangover chic in khaki shorts, a soft polo, and very large sunglasses. I think I'll pass on that today. I chuckled. You're so hungover right now, aren't you? I could feel her glaring through those sunglasses as we continued our stroll. I'm trying to set a positive example for my son, she complained. Mom, I'm 31. Not yet. Not till Saturday. Don't age yourself faster. It just makes me older, she reprimanded. You haven't aged a day, I told her.
You're a good boy, Jonah.
I learned from the best. We wandered up a side street and headed toward Main Street and the park.
This is an adorable town, she observed. Even hungover, I can appreciate it. Did you know I got a nice little note typed up and slid under my door today?
I could tell she was gearing up for something. They kicking you out already? I teased.
No, they just wanted to make sure I knew that my son kissed Shelby Thompson last night.
Mom!
Jonah!
She teased. The inn did not hand-deliver a gossip note to you, I argued. She smiled, and I slung my arm over her shoulder.
Okay, maybe they didn't deliver a note, but the front desk clerk and the girl who delivered my hangover care pack this morning both made sure to mention it.
I don't know if it means anything yet,
I said, anticipating the motherly concern. I'd gotten Shelby home, set her up with water and more pain relievers, and tucked her into bed for a nap. It made me feel useful, being able to do something, to fix something, or make it better. Mom stopped in front of Yeehaw Yarn and Coffee and peered through the window.
I'm just happy that you're happy, whatever it is. This town...
She nodded and said a polite hello to the third person who'd greeted her by name on our walk.
Getting to know your siblings, potentially having protected but expectation-free sex with Shelby, I like seeing you happy.
You make it sound like I was miserable at home.
You were grieving, and forgive me for saying so, but part of me wasn't sure if you were grieving Renee or the life you thought you'd have with her.
Was there a difference? Could you love someone and not be attached to how they fit into your life? Let's go hit up Moonshine and change the subject, I suggested, pointing in the direction of the popular ice cream shop.
Please tell me they don't put alcohol in their ice cream, Mom croaked. I don't think I can handle any more alcohol in my bloodstream for at least another hour or two.
I'm sure you can order a virgin butter pecan, I teased. Now, let's talk about your dating life.
Don't even get me started. Have you heard of Tinder?
Oh my God, Mom! I was mildly horrified.
What I'm looking for is a divorcee with a bunch of grown kids who will give me grandbabies, but all I get are men sending me below-the-belt selfies.
I made an urgent mental note to steal my mother's phone and delete the app just in case she was telling the truth and not just trying to get a rise out of me. You always wanted a big family, I said, ignoring the bait.
Instead, I had to settle for my one perfect boy, she said, tucking her arm around my waist.
It was an old routine, but this was the first time I'd heard the wistfulness in her tone. Moonshine's ice cream and cheese shop was a freestanding building tucked into a copse of trees on one end of Main Street. It had the requisite red and white striped ice cream shop awning, as well as a collection of picnic tables clustered under the pine trees. There were walk-up windows for warm weather orders on the side. Inside, the floors were black and white tile, the tables were round and red, and the ice cream and cheese selection was unbeatable.
Ooh, cheese,
my mom cooed, peering into the case. We can get some to go, I promised her. But first, ice cream. We ordered chocolate frozen yogurt for me and Blue Moon with sprinkles for her. The shop was crowded with residents and summertimers, so we headed back outside and snagged a table.
Hey, Jonah. Hey, Jenny.
Emily, pretty and perky, said with a wave as she hustled her four kids through the ice cream shop's doors.
How does everyone know my name? Mom asked. I haven't even been here 24 hours yet.
Give them another 24 hours and they'll have a complete dossier on your life since birth, I teased.
I'm going to grab a water. Do you want one?
She offered, getting up from the table. Sure, thanks. She went inside, and I gave my full attention to my yogurt. My phone chimed in my pocket, a text from Shelby. Shelby.
Nap complete.
Me. Feeling better? Shelby.
Still sore, but a lot better than last night. I think this is a mild flare. According to my research, I should be feeling significantly better soon.
I hesitated to respond. I liked that she was discussing her diagnosis with me and wanted her to feel safe enough to continue to do so, but I also didn't want to move us into intimate territory before we were ready. Me. Good. Do me a favor. Shelby.
Sure.
Me. Tell your rheumatologist you're signed up for a triathlon. And cue the crickets. I waited a minute, noting my mom was holding the front door of the shop open for a man, Jimmy Bob Prosser, hardware store owner and flannel connoisseur. Me. Stop pouting. Just ask him or her if they have any specific advice on how to proceed with training. Shelby. Fine. She included an annoyed emoji. Me. Jimmy Bob Prosser is putting the moves on my mother. Shelby. Which bootleg eligible bachelor is he? Oh no, he's not the one with the taxidermy hobby, is he? Me. No, thank God. JBP owns the hardware store. Shelby.
Oh, he's very handsome. I approve this match.
Me. He's also Misty Lynn's father. Shelby.
We don't know for sure if that's a nature or nurture problem. He could still be a nice stepfather for you. What's their body language saying?
Me. What would body language say? There was another minute of silence from Shelby while I watched Mom laugh at something Jimmy Bob said to her. Shelby.
Uh-oh. George needs me at his and June's place. Some kind of emergency. Keep me posted.
Me. You too. I looked up from my phone to see Jimmy Bob Prosser give my mother a sample of his ice cream cone. What the hell? You glaring at anyone in particular? Gibson scared the hell out of me, and I almost dropped my frozen yogurt. What are you doing here? I asked. You stupid. It's summer. This is an ice cream shop. Sorry, I'm distracted. Tell me everything you know about Jimmy Bob Prosser, I said, pointing my spoon in his direction. Gibson followed my gaze. You got a problem with your mom being human? I blinked. No, I wish her a happy and healthy sex life that I hope to never know anything about. I just want to make sure he's good enough. He took over the hardware store from his parents. His wife, Misty Lynn's mama, skipped town a few years back to follow her dreams of being a singer or an actress, some shit like that. Heard she never made it farther than one of those restaurants where the servers sing and dance.
Is he the reason Misty Lynn turned out the way she turned out?
Gibson shrugged. Some eggs are just hatched rotten. My mom threw her head back and laughed at something Jimmy Bob said. She brushed her hand down his arm. Uh-oh, Gibson said. That's definitely female interest there.
I want her to be happy, I said, reminding myself it was true. But is it too much to ask that I get to pick who she's happy with?
They're just flirting, he cautioned. No need to freak out.
Why is he getting out his phone? I asked. What the hell? Did she just give him her number?
Okay, a slight reason to freak out. Want me to have Cass run him for you? Background check, known priors? He offered.
My phone buzzed. Shelby. Bigger emergency than I thought. Can you get over here?
Shit. 5 question marks. That's not good. What's up? My brother asked.
Shelby has an emergency, but I can't leave my mom in the clutches of someone named Jimmy Bob.
I'll hang, he volunteered. Keep an eye, make sure she gets back to the inn.
Alone? I pressed, already backing away. He cracked a smile.
Alone, he promised.
Thanks, man. I owe you.
Me.
On my way.
22. Shelby. I was wandering around June and GT's front yard whistling and clapping my hands when Jonah pulled up. My body was still stiff, still sore, but at least I was ambulatory. Another hot bath was definitely in the cards for me tonight, I decided. What's the emergency? He asked, climbing out of the car looking 6 shades of delicious. I'd had breakfast with the man this morning, let him talk me into bed, alone, unfortunately, for a nap before lunch, and I still got the little dip and slide in my stomach when I saw his gorgeous face, concern written all over it. Oh,
thank God, man, my brother said, jogging around the side of the house. I fucked up, big time.
GT shoved his hands into his hair.
This doesn't involve a body, does it?
Jonah asked.
Oh, God. Shell, what if she makes a run for the road?
GT said, letting his imagination off its leash.
She'll be just fine, GT. Calm down, I said, scouring the underbrush.
Did you maim someone and hold them captive?
Jonah asked.
No, she just got loose. Marshmallow scared her, and she just bolted right out the door. Oh, my God. June's at the office for a meeting today. What if she finds her on the road? What if June finds her hit on the road? What if June hits her on the road?
GT, take a breath. She's not going anywhere near the road, and Junie isn't going to find her.
Someone, please explain so I can decide if I'm helping or avoiding becoming an accessory,
Jonah said. GT got June a pot-bellied pig as a surprise, I explained. His bunny, Mello, scared the crap out of the poor pig, and she bolted.
She doesn't even have a name yet. I mean, I think it's going to be Catherine, but I didn't tell her yet,
GT said.
We can't call her by the name she doesn't have. This was supposed to be the best surprise. Now there's a pig running around becoming a bear snack.
I knew there were bears here, I said triumphantly.
Jonah held up his hands.
Let's deal with one problem at a time. Did you see which way Nameless Pig went?
GT paced.
She ran out the back, and I tripped trying to avoid Mello.
Mello weighed maybe 2 pounds in my estimation. The fact that my gigantic football hulk of a brother twisted to fall on his girlfriend's breakfast table, breaking it in half, rather than squish a bunny, was adorably sweet and oh so GT. There were woods behind the house and a trail. It was as good a place as any to start. What does she eat? I asked my brother.
She eats vegetables mostly and some pig pellets, he said.
Okay, I need you to put some of the pellets into a container with hard sides, something that will make noise when I shake it. Got it?
Jonah said, catching on.
Yeah, okay, GT nodded. Yeah, that's good.
He charged into the house.
What's the plan, Inspector Pig Finder? I asked Jonah.
Start warming up. You and I are going for a little jog.
We left GT behind us in case No Name circled back. Also, the fact was a 300-pound receiver lumbering through the woods would probably scare the poor creature farther away. The trail behind the house was rocky and uneven, but the woods were thin enough that we could see in all directions. While we jogged, Jonah shook the container as I called, "Here, pig, pig, pig!"
I didn't think to ask. Is she friendly?
He asked, scouring the tree line ahead. We were taking it slow, and my joints were grateful for it.
I think so. GT said she rode like a dog in the passenger seat on the way home. He adopted her from a rescue, and all the staff there just loved her. Here, pig, pig, pig.
We ran in silence for a few moments, and I had to admit that it felt good to be out and moving in the sunshine. Even though I was hunting for a missing pot-bellied pig instead of training for a triathlon or, you know, actually writing my dissertation, I've had a lot of expectations about my life. This scenario was not one of them, I mused. Jonah cracked a smile beside me. God, he was good-looking. He wasn't broad like my brother. He wasn't broody like his brother Gibson. He was tall and lean with sharp cheekbones and grass-green eyes that looked into you. But it was the smile that took him into the interesting stratosphere.
Given any thought to my offer? I asked cheerfully.
Jonah stumbled on the path, and I grabbed his arm to hold him upright.
Geez, Shelby, aren't researchers supposed to be patient?
Oh, come on, I said, scanning the field that opened up on my right. I was kidding, mostly. Besides, what else are we going to talk about on our pig hunt?
You brought it up hours ago, he complained. I said I'd think about it.
I liked seeing him flustered. You're not just trying to come up with a way to tell me you aren't attracted to me, are you? I asked.
He slowed his pace and came to a stop, still shaking the container of pellets.
Look, it's been a while for me, he confessed.
How long is a while? A month? 6 months?
15.
15 days? I pressed.
15 months, That was longer than I expected. That was longer than my longest dry spell. That was longer than most of the relationships I'd been in. Whoa, I said, catching my breath. Since Renee? I asked.
Yeah. So there's some pressure. Kissing you was the first contact I'd had in a long time, and it was overwhelming. Kind of rattled me, he admitted. I don't know if I'm ready to explore that.
There was that vulnerability again, and I was a sucker for it. As much as I'd like to take credit for an earth-shattering kiss, I told him, there was ambiance. We were outside, under the stars. There was a bonfire and a proposal. It was orchestrated for romance. You were reacting to physical and mental stimuli, that's all. It's biology with some fun chemistry thrown in. He studied me.
So if we kissed, say right now, it wouldn't be the same stimuli and therefore not the same outcome?
We're sweating half to death chasing a pig, which, by the way, only in bootleg, am I right? I think it's safe to say that, no, it would not be the same chemical reaction, but we could test the theory. We're only changing one variable, the environment, I mused, intrigued with the idea, also always up for a kiss that would melt my bones.
Are you suggesting I kiss you right now?
He asked. Do it for science, Jonah, I teased. He laughed softly, stepping in close. My body was already humming at his proximity.
Hang on, he said, putting the container of pellets on the ground. Let's do this right.
Instead of threading his hands into my hair, this time Jonah slid them around my waist, pulling me in until we were pressed up against each other. My back was sweaty. I hadn't bothered with deodorant this morning. My bangs were everywhere. But his serious eyes demanded my full attention. He was moving in soft and slow again. Wait. I put my hand up and held him where he was. I'll kiss you this time. On the off chance that him slow motion kissing me was the trigger for earth shifting under our feet, it would be safer to change up the process.
Okay, he said, his voice husky.
I slipped my arms around his neck and rose on my tiptoes. Are you ready for this? He nodded, his fingers disrupting the trickle of sweat running down my back. I skipped the slow motion and went in hot. It was supposed to be fun and light, reassuring, friendly even. But our mouths met, and everything went sideways. It wasn't the sounds of summer in bootleg that I heard now. It was his breath, ragged and harsh. The sun disappeared from my skin, and instead I felt the heat and pressure of his hands, the erection stirring in his shorts, the hammer-like thud of my heart in my chest. I was the aggressor here, opening my mouth and sinking my teeth into that perfect lower lip of his.
Shelby, he growled.
And then our tongues were tangling, hands roaming, teeth biting. He slipped his hands under my t-shirt, thumbs resting under the band of my sports bra, his broad palms spanning my ribcage. I went for the gold. I removed my arms from around his neck and shoved my hands into the back of his shorts, squeezing the world's most perfect ass. His erection was at full attention now, throbbing against my stomach. Biology was so damn sexy. The kiss was wildly unpredictable, both of us fighting to deepen it, both of us fighting to hold back. And I realized too late that this would do nothing to relieve his concerns. I decided to worry about that later. At least until what sounded like an ear-splitting shriek cracked the cone of sexy that surrounded us. We pulled back and stared at each other. I'm very stimulated, I whispered. My lips felt swollen. Jonah's eyes had gone to green glass. His grip on me was deliciously possessive.
What the hell was that?
He asked, finally breaking through the sexual haze. One hell of a kiss. The shriek sounded again, high-pitched and frantic. That's a pig. Come on!
23. Jonah. That is not a baby pig, I said, eyeing the hefty black form that trotted down the path to us.
Pot-bellied pigs can weigh up to 120 pounds,
Shelby recited.
I'm not sure how I know that.
No name had to be at least 50 pounds and had black bristly hair and a curly tail that was wagging like a delighted dog.
There's a halter but no leash, I said, the realization sinking in. How are we going to get her back to the house?
Shelby gnawed on the lower lip that I'd just kissed. I was still fully hard, the after effects of a second world-tilting kiss still occupying most of my brain power and blood supply. I was definitely going to worry about the outcome of our experiment later. For now, I had to figure out how to get a pig home.
Maybe she'll just follow us?
She said hopefully. The pig pranced up to us, stopping about 6 feet out. It squealed and danced on dainty hooves. Adjusting my hard-on, I squatted down and held out my hand. This works for dogs, but I'm not sure about pigs. If I could get a hand on her, I could pick her up and then carry her the mile back to the house. She pranced away and then back again, squealing insistently. Am I stupid for saying that it looks like she wants us to follow her? I asked.
I'm so glad you said it. I didn't want you to think I was an idiot. What's the matter, Piggy? Is someone stuck in a well?
Shelby asked, head cocked. The pig bowed on its front feet like a dog and then jogged up the path in front of us. She stopped a few yards out and hurried back. I shrugged and stood. Looks like a yes to me. Let's see where she's going. The pig seemed delighted that we were following her. She scurried a few yards in front of us over the crest of the trail before veering off into the meadow, tall grass tangled around rock outcroppings and trunks of trees.
Is now a good time to mention I really don't want to step on one of those poisonous snakes that reside in rural West Virginia?
She confessed. At least we'll be able to see the bears coming.
You're so silver lining-y, she said.
We picked up the pace. The pig was on a mission. I just hoped she wasn't leading us to a giant pile of shit or a dead body. If a Bodine was found in the vicinity of a dead body, law enforcement would have a shit fit. The pig came to a stop in front of a few jagged rocks under a huge hickory tree. The shade was a welcome respite. I swiped the sweat out of my eyes with the hem of my t-shirt. The breeze stirred the leaves over our heads. The pig squealed and then lay down.
What's that?
Shelby asked, venturing closer.
Oh my God, Jonah!
It was a puppy. At least I thought it was a puppy. The poor thing's fur was matted with mud and probably shit. It had a dirty rope around its neck, the end of which was tangled in loose branches and rocks. It whimpered.
Oh, you poor baby.
Shelby eased in, careful not to startle the pig or the pup. The pig nudged her hand, and Shelby gave her a stroke.
You're a hero, little pig. You just saved this baby's life.
I edged in and grimly went to work on the rope. It was filthy, and the dog's neck was rubbed raw beneath it. Whoever had this dog is not getting him back.
Oh, he is a he,
Shelby said with delight as she lifted him carefully into her lap. Listlessly, he lapped at her hand. It was impossible to tell what color he was through the layers of dirt and mud, and God knows what else. But he had the floppy-eared look of the beagle my neighbors had in Jetty Beach. He's probably dehydrated and hungry as fuck, I predicted.
Get the pellets, she ordered, and bring me the water bottle I dropped.
I did as instructed. Shelby cupped her hands in front of the puppy, and I poured the now warm water into her palms. If dogs could be grateful, this puppy was worshiping Shelby. He drank deeply, and I refilled her hands. The pig nosed her way in.
Are you thirsty too? Shelby laughed. I bet, with all that running you did. We gave them the rest of the water and then the treats. The puppy devoured the pig kibble as if it were Kobe beef. Two animals and no leashes, Shelby said, eyeing me. I sighed. I'll carry the pig. Hey, remember that time we kissed and then carried a pig and a puppy all the way home? Talk about a memorable summer fling, Shelby joked behind me. It was a long, sticky walk back. The pig seemed happy enough to be carried, but had to continually reassure herself with glances over my shoulder at the puppy cradled in Shelby's arms. I had the heavier of the two, but Shelby was holding the one that smelt like cow shit. We were within 100 yards of the house when George lumbered up the trail. Catherine! He ran to us, and the pig scrambled against my chest. Catherine? I asked. It was an interesting name for the pig. After Catherine Johnson, the NASA mathematician, he said, reaching his receiver paws for the pig. I handed her over. You're a good boyfriend, GT. June's going to love Catherine, Shelby predicted with a grin. Why are you holding a lump of dirt? Her brother moved in closer, caught a whiff, and backed off again. Jesus! Are you carrying a load of shit? Oh, this old thing? This is just the puppy your pig saved, Shelby said. I slapped George on the shoulder and shook out my arms to get the circulation moving again. Ah, your pet pig is a hero. She led us right to him. He ushered us in through the back, this time securing the door behind us. Mello the bunny hopped into the kitchen. Now, listen, Catherine. You and Mello have to be friends. There are no other options. Got it? He explained. The pig wiggled, and George set her gently on the tile floor. She tiptoed toward the fluffy bunny. The bunny took a tentative hop closer. Catherine's nose twitched as she leaned in for a sniff. Guess you're not scared anymore, George observed. Aren't pigs highly intelligent? Shelby asked from the kitchen sink where she was preparing the disgusting puppy for a bath. Maybe she knew this little guy was in trouble. While Mello hopped off with Catherine on her heels, George flopped down in a kitchen chair next to the totaled table that lay crumpled on the floor. You're my fucking heroes. You'll be June's hero when she gets home from the office today, Shelby promised him. I joined her at the sink and dug around for the dish detergent. This should be safe for him. I turned the water on and let it warm up. The puppy scrambled against the stainless steel, but Shelby kept him contained. This is for your own good, little man. You smell like a porta potty, she warned him. We washed and dried the little guy and tried to keep him from drinking the filthy bath water and eating the soap bubbles. He was getting cuter by the minute. He had patches of brown and black and white with huge velvety ears. George stopped chasing Catherine around with the big red bow he was trying to affix to her long enough to share some ground chicken and rice with the puppy. His tail wagged while he ate, and the tips of his ears dipped into the bowl. Shelby interlaced her fingers with mine. What are we going to do with him? And before you say look for the owner, I'm going to stop you right there. Whoever tied him around the neck with a rope deserves to be run over by a pickup truck and pecked to death by Mona Lisa. Agreed. Let's get him to the vet, have him checked out, then we'll go from there, I said, watching as the little guy fell asleep in his food. We can't keep him, she said, staring at the dog with hearts in her eyes. Can we? Of course not. How would we decide who keeps him at the end of the summer? It would be a custody disaster. Right, of course, she agreed, but the hearts were still there. The pup sneezed in his sleep, and the sound was just about the cutest thing I'd heard in my entire life. We'll keep him for now, I decided, until we can find him a good home.
Fostering, okay.
She nodded and squeezed my hand. Thanks for carrying my brother's pig all the way back.
Sentences you only hear in bootleg springs. She laughed and released my hand.
GT, we're going to take Catherine's puppy to the vet, she called as she walked into the living room. What's all this? Is June getting a doctorate too?
I followed her into the room. It was a comfortable space despite its over-the-top tidiness. Bookcases jammed with books flanked both sides of the brick fireplace. In front of them were stacks of boxes and a whiteboard with notes scrawled across it. That's Scooby June's Cali Kendall research, George said, adjusting Catherine's bow and giving the pig a scratch. She was convinced there was something wrong with fake Cali's story and did some digging.
That's a lot of digging,
Shelby observed. I could tell she was impressed. When she gets focused on something, she doesn't stop. He grinned, flipping the lid off the top box.
I need to learn her ways or I'm never going to finish my dissertation, she complained, peering into the box.
Mello hopped over to me and sniffed my shoe. I leaned down to stroke the bunny's soft fur. Don't get her started on research, I warned him. You'll have two Scoobies in the house.
What's this file about Constance Bodine? Shelby asked, her interest piqued.
I made myself comfortable on the couch. Mello eyed me expectantly, so I picked her up. Turns out that Connie Bodine's accident might not have been an accident, GT explained. I thought of my mother and realized I hadn't had a status update from Gibson yet. Had he left his post? Had my mother been coaxed into a pickup truck by Jimmy Bob Prosser?
What would that have to do with Cali Kendall? Shelby asked.
GT shrugged. Probably nothing, but she died coming back from a big fundraiser thing that Mrs. Kendall attended in Baltimore.
That's an odd coincidence, Shelby mused.
That's what June thought, too. It's not like they ran in similar social circles. The puppy woke with a bark and skittered into the room. He stopped at my feet, tail wagging. I leaned down and picked him up. He cuddled up against the bunny, licked Mello, then me.
Are you purposely trying to be the sexiest man in the universe right now?
I looked up and found Shelby watching me, hands on hips.
You're cuddling a puppy and a bunny.
She had those hearts in her eyes again, but this time they were directed at me. And I sure as hell liked it. I had a feeling my dry spell might finally come to its official end.
24. Shelby. I'd thought for sure I'd be getting naked tonight, especially after that kiss. Instead, I was setting the table for three. Not that I didn't like Jenny Leland. She was lovely and bright and funny. She was also the mother of the guy I was trying to see naked. And as such, she was essentially cock-blocking me. However, given Jonah's uncertainty and all the excitement of the day with pigs and puppies, I was prepared to be patient.
Aren't you just the smartest little guy in the whole wide world?
Jenny cooed at the puppy, who sat his wiggling butt on the floor when she held up one of the treats Jonah had picked up at the pop-in today. He'd been a favorite at the vet earlier, malnourished and underweight, covered in fleas, but friendly and sweet. He was given a bag of special dog food, a flea bath, and an optimistic bill of health. We were given a coupon to Pet Paradise, a pet store in downtown Bootleg. We'd gone on a spree that included food, dishes, collars and leashes, a crate with memory foam mattress, and an entire basket of toys for our temporary dog. A pan sizzled in the kitchen where Jonah was cooking something that smelled suspiciously of vegetables. "Can I top off your wine?" I offered Jenny. She held out her glass and smiled.
I'm allowed this refill and that's it. I don't think I can survive another bootleg hangover so early in my visit.
She was a pretty woman with short blonde hair and a long, lean frame.
It wasn't hard to guess where Jonah got his quick grin and those gorgeous green eyes.
"What are you guys going to name him?"
she asked me, nodding at the dog while I poured. "Jonah and I have gone a couple rounds over it," I confessed. For two people who aren't keeping a dog, we're putting way too much thought into a name. But we finally settled on Billy Ray, in homage to his country roots. Jenny laughed and studied the dog as he pounced on a green alligator squeak toy.
"Welcome to the family, Billy Ray."
As if in acknowledgement, Billy Ray tipped over on his back and wiggled in delight. "Dinner's ready," Jonah called from the kitchen. "Need any help?" I asked. "Just make yourselves comfortable. I'll bring it in."
"It's probably something healthy," I warned Jenny. "But I picked up a pie from the bakery for dessert, so we just have to make it through the vegetables."
"You're adorable," she observed. "I can see why my son is interested in you."
I felt my face flush with pleasure at the thought. Was this a weird conversation to be having with a potential sexual partner's mother? I was of the opinion that the United States was a bit too prudish about something as natural as sex, and that opinion often led me to make people uncomfortable in polite conversation. For instance, how the physical connection accomplished through sex was often pursued as a way to feel more connected, less alienated, or lonely. Not exactly dinner conversation.
"Ladies, please give my vegetable and beef stir-fry the standing ovation it deserves,"
Jonah announced from the doorway of the dining room. He hefted a wok, the contents still steaming and still smelling healthy. Jenny applauded. I sniffed apprehensively.
"A few bites, and if you hate it, you can nuke your nuggets," he promised me.
"Jonah is trying to expand my palate," I said to Jenny.
"It's stunted in 4-year-old territory," he explained to his mother.
"Really?" she asked, pulling out a chair. "What's your favorite meal?" "I rely heavily on small microwavable pizzas and chicken nuggets. If I'm feeling fancy, I go for a box of mac and cheese."
"Jonah tells me you're pursuing a doctorate in social work. Have you experienced any of the phobias associated with being a restrictive eater?"
I lit up, remembering Jenny had been working on a psychology degree when she'd gotten pregnant with Jonah. He rolled his eyes and dished out the food while his mother and I debated the social stigmas of picky eating.
"Speaking of eating habits," I said, changing the subject before he got bored, "I heard you had ice cream with a few of Bootleg's eligible bachelors this afternoon."
Jenny smiled and looked at her plate.
"I met a very charming hardware store owner," she said.
"Jimmy Bob Prosser certainly is handsome," I prodded. Jonah didn't look exactly thrilled over the turning conversation, but he didn't get defensive either. Points for him, I decided.
"And then I spent some time with Gibson. He showed me his shop."
Jonah looked up from the stir-fry.
"Gibson Bodine?"
Jenny nodded, looking amused.
"He willingly took you to his place?"
he pressed.
She laughed. "He did. He showed me the cabinets he's working on right now. It's this custom bar for a client in Perrinville. They're stunning. He does incredible work."
"Mom, I lived here for 6 months before I even saw the man's driveway," he said.
I pushed a snow pea around my plate, trying to soak up as much of the sauce as possible to drown out the vegetableness. I took a breath and popped it in my mouth. It wasn't my favorite, but the sauce was nice. I could probably choke down a few more bites, make a good impression.
"I think he's kind of lonely," Jenny mused.
I slapped the table enthusiastically. "I think so, too."
"He's not lonely," Jonah argued. "He's a loner. There's a difference."
"He can be both," I insisted. "I really like him," she said. "Scarlett, too. It's hard not to fall in love with her. And Jameson and Bowie seem like good men."
"They're a tight family. Good people," I supplied.
"Good people waiting to find out if their father was a drunk and a murderer or just a drunk," Jonah said.
I stuffed a bite of beef in my mouth.
"He never talked about the situation. Not around me."
I knew he was protective toward the Bodines, but I was still curious how he felt about it all.
Jenny reached over and took his hand. "Your father, their father, was no murderer. I'm sure of that."
"That's all well and good, Mom, but opinions won't give either family any peace."
Jonah said.
We ran into the Kendalls this morning, and you can just see the toll this is taking on them.
Her eyes widened. The investigation has been going on for quite some time since Scarlett found the sweater in her father's things after he passed away, I explained. I was curious how Jenny felt about the father of her only child and his untimely death, his unhappy life, but again, the dinner table probably wasn't the place to dig into those questions. I think everyone is frustrated and fatigued without any firm answers. We may never know for sure what happened to Callie Kendall.
Jonah's wife, Connie, died in a car accident about a year after the Kendall girl disappeared,
Jonah told his mother.
Now they're saying there's a possibility that it wasn't an accident at all.
Jenny fumbled her fork, and it fell to her plate with a clang.
Billy Ray woke with a start from his nap under the table and started barking. Then the barking switched to howling.
Definitely some beagle in the little guy,
Jonah shouted over the ruckus. Billy Ray, quiet down now, I said, poking my head under the table.
The dog looked surprised by his own big voice.
Jonah's phone rang in the kitchen. He glanced down at his fitness watch.
Huh.
What's wrong? I asked.
Scarlett's calling, and I just got a bunch of messages from Bowie.
He left the table and answered his phone.
Slow down, Scar. What channel?
From the table, Jenny and I watched him pace into the living room and turn on the TV. The evening news anchor was talking about Callie Kendall. I pushed my chair back and hurried to join Jonah in the living room.
The skull had been missing from the skeletal remains found a few weeks ago outside of Cleary. The human remains were discovered during excavation for a housing development. Experts believe the bones are between 11 and 13 years old, a timeline that coincides with the high-profile disappearance of 16-year-old Callie Kendall. With the discovery of the skull, investigators are confident the remains will be identified through dental records,
the anchor said.
Yeah, I heard it,
Jonah said into his phone.
Okay, thanks.
He disconnected the call and tossed his phone on the couch. He shoved a hand through his hair.
Am I an ass for hoping the Kendalls aren't about to get the closure they deserve?
You're not an ass, I assured him. Jonah, Jenny began from the doorway.
Just then the doorbell rang, and the dog tore out from under the table, barking his sweet little head off.
Geez, Billy Ray,
Jonah complained.
I'll get the door. You get the dog, I yelled over the ruckus.
I pulled the front door open and stopped in surprise.
Mom? Dad?
25. Jonah.
Surprise!
The couple at the front door sang in unison. Then Shelby was flinging the screen door open and jumping into their arms.
That Scarlett sure has been busy,
Mom observed behind me. I nipped Billy Ray under his little puppy armpits and picked him up. He licked my face with enthusiasm.
What are you two doing here?
Shelby asked, pressing a kiss to her father's cheek and another to her mother's. He was tall and broad, and I could tell where GT got his shoulders. She was softer, quieter, and had a good 4 inches of leg on her daughter. Both had a good amount of silver in their hair, cropped short for him and poker straight and shoulder length for her. Adopted, I remembered, when I searched for the familial resemblance that would tie Shelby to them. But there didn't need to be a physical link, not when they were all so obviously happy to see each other.
We missed you and your brother,
Shelby's mom said, giving her daughter another squeeze for good measure. And your friend Scarlett gave us a great deal on a rental for the week, her father said cheerfully. Shelby turned and met my gaze. Damn that Scarlett Bodine. Of course my sister had had available rentals while telling us we had to cohabitate.
Well, get in here. Was GT surprised to see you?
Shelby asked, ushering them inside. My mom and I shared a short, meaningful look, both of us wondering why Shelby assumed they'd go to GT first.
We came straight here, her dad insisted. Your brother's been good about emailing, but you, young lady, keep trying to disappear off the face of the earth.
Shelby laughed nervously.
I've just been...
busy, her parents finished for her.
I can see why, her mother said, eyeing me from the doorway.
Billy Ray scrambled up my chest and stuck his nose in my face.
Mom, Dad, this is Jonah, and not our dog, Billy Ray. And this is Jonah's mom, Jenny. Jonah, Jenny, these are my parents, Darlene and James.
Introductions were made, handshakes exchanged.
How about I open another bottle of wine?
My mother volunteered.
I'll get more glasses,
Shelby said. The two of them ducked into the kitchen, and the Thompsons watched me expectantly. Well, Darlene watched me. James made kissy noises at the dog. Are you two hungry? I asked. We've got plenty of stir-fry.
Stir-fry?
Darlene said, her eyebrows arching.
Chicken nuggets stir-fry?
Har, har, Mom,
Shelby called from the kitchen.
Jonah's forcing me to eat better to help my training for the triathlon.
Triathlon? James brightened, looking interested. I assumed the father of a professional athlete probably had an innate enjoyment of sports.
Triathlon?
Her mother repeated. Shelby and my mom returned with glasses of wine.
I signed up for one at the beginning of August. Jonah is a personal trainer and is helping me get ready for it.
Darlene looked surprised. Here, I said, handing her Billy Ray. Puppies made everyone happier.
Oh, look at his sweet face,
she said in rapture.
Oh, what happened to his poor little neck? Someone tied this poor baby up with a rope.
My mom and Shelby filled them in on how exactly we found him.
An escaped pot-bellied pig led you to him?
Darlene asked, returning to surprised.
That escaped pot-bellied pig is your grandchild,
Shelby told them.
So be prepared for that when you get to GT's.
Welcome to Bootleg Springs, I said, raising my wine glass to them. My mother was with James and Darlene on the front porch, admiring the slow set of the sun through the leaves, while Shelby and I cleaned up in the tiny kitchen. That kiss today, I began, keeping my voice low.
You mean our interrupted experiment?
She asked, amused. Yeah, that.
Don't worry about it, Jonah,
she assured me, nudging me with her elbow.
If and when you're ready to experiment again, you know where to find me. I don't want to rush you into being the most memorable, no-strings-attached sexual experience of my adult life.
I appreciated that. Thanks, I said. I think I need to go see my brothers, and maybe you want to spend some time alone with your parents?
I think that's a good idea,
Shelby agreed.
Why don't you take Billy Ray with you? Puppies make everyone happier.
I like that you think about other people, I said, reaching out and tracing her lower lip with my thumb.
Well, that was a sweet thing to say,
she said, sounding baffled. I grinned and brushed my lips over her bangs.
I'll see you around, Shelby. Bye, Jonah.
I rounded up the pup and packed half of his belongings in case he needed a snack or a drink or a toy or flea medicine. I said my goodbyes, kissed my mother goodnight, and dialed Bowie on my way down the driveway.
I feel like we should hang out, talk, I said.
Jameson called me 5 minutes ago. I was just getting ready to text you,
Bowie said.
Gibson's in 15?
Sounds good to me.
I'm bringing a special guest, I warned him.
Yeah, well, I'm bringing a 12-pack.
Gibson's house was a good half mile up switchbacks and hairpin turns. I had no idea how the man made it home in the winter. I was the first brother to arrive. I ignored the house, an austere log cabin built on land that had once belonged to his grandfather. Our grandfather, I corrected, and followed the lights coming from the workshop.
It was the large metal pole building that Gibson spent more time in than his actual house. Snapping the leash on Billy Ray's collar, I put him down. You'd probably better pee out here before we go in there. If you piss on one of Gibson's custom cabinets, there's no telling what he'll do. As if not willing to sully his first impression, Billy Ray sniffed and lifted his leg on a sapling. Good job, buddy. He did two more good jobs before we made it to the shop door. I skipped knocking, since the music was loud, and let myself in. The smells of polyurethane and sawdust melded together in a satisfying scent of manly productivity. Toby Keith belted one out on the speakers mounted in the rafters. Gibson was at a workbench against the wall, organizing hand tools. He had an open root beer in his hand. Gibbs didn't drink, ever. He tapped his phone, and the music's volume cut in half. "What the hell is that?" he asked, pointing the bottle at the dog at my feet. "That's your temporary nephew, Billy Ray." He bent at the waist and slapped his thighs. "Come here, buddy. Come on." The dog perked up and, deciding the big man with the surly expression looked like a good source of attention, bounded across the concrete. "That's a good boy," Gibbs said, roughing the puppy up. Billy Ray dissolved into ecstasy and flopped over on his back, inviting belly rubs. The door banged open again. Bowie, followed by Jameson, strolled inside.
"I got beer and root beer,"
Bowie announced, holding up 2 12-packs.
"Who wants?"
I caught the can he tossed in my direction.
"What the hell is that?"
Jameson asked, looking at the dog now cradled in Gibson's arms. "That's Billy Ray, my special guest," I told them, filling them in on the day of pigs, puppies, and surprise visitors. They took turns asking questions and calling bullshit on the fact that I walked a mile carrying a 50-pound pig, even going so far as to text George for confirmation. Small talk complete, we drew up stools around a relatively clean work table. Billy Ray contented himself to fall asleep in Gibson's arms. "So," Bowie said, popping the top on a beer.
"So,"
Jameson repeated.
"Not much to say," Gibson said, staring down at the puppy. "Either it's her or it's not."
"What happens if it is?" I asked.
"I talked to Jamie on my way here," Bowie said. "If the remains are Callie's, there's still only circumstantial evidence connecting Dad to her."
"And he's still dead," Gibson said.
He sounded more resigned than bitter.
"The candles will get closure," Jameson said. "But we'll have that shadow hanging over the rest of us."
"We've dealt with shadows before," Bowie said. "We'll handle this one too. It doesn't change who we are."
He looked directly at me. "None of us." I nodded, and most of me believed him. The four of us were already better than the man who'd made us. I just hoped that the rest of the world would see that.
"Now that that's settled, I'd like to ask y'all to be in my wedding," Bowie announced.
Billy Ray woke with a start and sneezed in Gibson's face. Wiping puppy saliva off his face,